Cascadia. You're listening to your community radio station, KBOO, Portland, Oregon, at 90.7 FM. Today is Tuesday, Cinco de Mayo, 2009, and this is Air Cascadia. Long on content, short on time. I'm Chris Andre.
And I'm Liam Delta.
The Living Future Conference kicks off today. Cascadia Regional Green Buildings, Jean Franzosa, joins us to talk about the event.
The EPA says corn ethanol is worse for the environment than gasoline when land use changes are factored in.
And President Barack Obama says that he's going to close tax loopholes that, like wormholes in space, channel money to far-off galaxies like Switzerland.
Portland area weather, showers and a chance of thunderstorms this morning, temperature in the 50s and windy. Tonight, more showers, rain, lows in the 40s and the wind dropping off a bit. And then tomorrow, more of the same.
And first we go to news from around Cascadia. The third annual Living Future Conference starts tomorrow in Portland. It was held in Vancouver, B.C. last year and for the first time in Seattle in 2007. The conference is organized by Cascadia Region Green Building Council. This event comes amid a growing race to build the first living building. Gina Franzosa, Oregon Director of the Cascadia Region Green Building Council, joins us this morning to talk about the conference and Oregon's green credentials. Good morning, Gina.
Good morning, Chris.
Well, thank you so much for being with us. My first question, of course, is what is a living building?
It's a building that has absolutely no impact on the environment and actually seeks to be in harmony with the environment and provide restoration, even if possible.
Why don't we build things this way on a routine basis? It seems to make the best sense.
Well, you know, if you think about, you know, the first times that humans tried to build structures on the planet, they pretty much only had the resources at hand that they could find from the earth, and so they were technically building living buildings. But I think we've long lived for a time when we thought we could engineer our way out of issues or problems, or push environmental issues off to the side and find solutions at a later date. And we're simply at that later date right now. And so we've got to find the solutions now and move rapidly toward them.
So what would one attending the conference expect? What's the program?
Oh, what a great question. So the limited number of people who are lucky enough to go on some building tours on Wednesday afternoon are going to get to see some great examples of green buildings throughout the city, including a restoration of one of Portland U State University's buildings, some affordable housing buildings. And then they're going to get to hear from, you know, some leading thinkers, internationally recognized leading thinkers on concepts such as biomimicry with Janine Benyus. And even they'll hear from Dennis Hayes, who is he's now the executive director of the Bullitt Foundation, but he had a major role in starting Earth Day celebration, which is now an annual celebration, very widely celebrated. And Thomas Crum is an interesting speaker who's not a usual speaker to the professional crowd. He speaks on nonviolent conflict resolution, and so the green building professionals are coming to this conference to learn technical as well as leadership skills, and they're going to be learning about that from Thomas Crum. So
social justice, yeah, social justice always plays a role. Thank you so much for that, Gina. We've been speaking this morning with Gina Franzosa, Oregon Director of the Cascadia Region Green Building Council. Thanks, Gina.
Thank you.
The EPA says that corn ethanol, as made today, has a worse impact on climate than gasoline when land use changes are considered. But hedging its bets, the EPA added that future improvements in production technologies are expected to make ethanol and other biofuels more climate-friendly than gasoline. Meanwhile, President Obama issued a directive to find ways to get automakers to make more cars that run on ethanol and to make ethanol more widely available at fueling stations.
And on the same topic of plants affecting climate and climate plants, a study published in the May issue of Ecological Monographs says that global warming will dry out forests, but researchers need to also consider changes in the types and abundance of plants to accurately predict forest fire risk. Researchers carbon-dated sediment deposits in lake bottoms to document the effects of climate change on fire in the South Central Brooks Range of Alaska. They found that changes in climate were less important than changes in vegetation. Well, whatever helps them sleep at night.
Yeah. Maybe logging can save the trees. The housing slump has sapped demand for timber and made it tough to find logging work. Earlier this spring, loggers became some of the first unemployed Oregonians to benefit from the Obama administration stimulus program. In the months ahead, the U.S. Forest Service will spend more than $1 billion to thin timber stands at risk of wildfires, repair roads, maintain trails, and tackle other work in the forest. The money will be used on federal land as well as some tribal, state, and private lands, like agribusiness subsidies, except for the timber industry.
Yeah, it's exactly the same philosophy, and with often the same outcome. The mercury is rising, but not just in the climate thermometer. A study documents a 30% increase since the mid-1990s in mercury levels in the northern Pacific Ocean between Hawaii and Alaska. The increase is likely the result of increased emissions from Asian coal and cement plants. The study documented how man-made emissions of mercury are broken down into methyl mercury, which eventually can contaminate seafood such as tuna. Seafood, in other words, marine life.
Oregon regulators are seeking public comment on a state permit for a new construction debris recycling plant at the Hillsboro landfill. The material recovery facility, like the landfill, would be operated by Waste Management, Inc. It's under construction now with plans for a more than 66,000-square-foot building that would accept dry construction debris such as wood, concrete, asphalt, and metal.
An Idaho fish and game plan to reduce by half the number of pelicans nesting near the Blackfoot Reservoir is garnering criticism from bird lovers and other conservationists. Fish and game officials believe that the pelicans are eating spawning Yellowstone cutthroat trout, which is causing a decline in the numbers of the fish in the reservoir. As with the sea lions at Bonneville Dam, it's easier to blame other animals for the impact of human activity on habitat. That's why they call it a scapegoat, not a scape guy.
PGE posted higher first quarter earnings yesterday as it enjoyed the impact of rate increases approved by regulators last year. Despite higher rates, PGE's earnings fell far short of the consensus estimates of Wall Street analysts. They had forecast earnings of 53 cents a share. What investors got was 44 cents a share.
And continuing to follow the money down Chestnut Lane. Chestnut Lane, of course, the assisted living center in Gresham, is one of the many retirement homes affiliated with Sunset Management. Sunset indeed. Residents there can't be happy at the fallout of a recent stock fraud scandal. Lawyers and other professionals in the SunWest Management legal brawl have racked up a $24 million tab in the past year. That sum could go as high as $90 million over the next 12 months.
The Oregonian got hold of documents that show state officials were slow to catch and even slower to stop risky investments made by managers of the Oregon College Savings Plan. The foot dragging resulted in tens of millions of dollars in losses to students and their families.
And now we go to national news with KBO's reporter Spencer Raymond. Just as the markets began to make a somewhat shaky recovery, President Barack Obama announces that he's closing offshore tax haven loopholes and asking corporations to pay their fair share. Okay, so Obama is a very smart man. Why the apparently self-destructive timing of all this? Good morning, Spencer. What's your take on it?
Good morning, Chris. Yeah, it is interesting. I mean, we should point out to begin with that both the S&P 500 and the NASDAQ are in positive territory now for the year. The Dow is getting close. So if you look at Obama and his plan to close these offshore tax loopholes, it's almost like he has some capital in the market, not cash, but the political capital that you remember Bush would always talk about back in 2004. He has some capital to spend, so to speak, now because the markets are doing well, and he can really lay one on them that a lot of traders are going to be upset about and a lot of these big businesses are going to be really angry over. The other side here, their argument is going to be you do not want to start taxing corporations more, especially in a time like this being a recession. But the Obama plan wouldn't go into effect until 2011. That's when the administration thinks that the recession will be over with.
But they're going to react now.
Yeah, one interesting thing, though, is that I think listeners to KBOO should be less concerned with offshore accounts and be more concerned about helping out and supporting KABU, especially this week.
Thank you so much for that, Spencer. That, of course, is KBOO Spencer Raymond, who joins us every weekday morning with DC Dirt. Thanks, Spencer.
Thank you.
Starting this summer, Washington State convicted felons will be able to re-register to vote once they're no longer in parole or probation. Currently, felons can't vote until they've completed their entire sentence, including paying all restitution and other court fees.
And here, some other people behind bars should be noting this carefully. Democrats in the U.S. House of Representatives unveiled a $94.2 billion emergency spending bill to cover the wars in Iraq and Afghanistan, fight this so-called flu pandemic, and a range of other outlays. Strangely, lawmakers dealt a blow to Obama's push to close Guantanamo Bay by stripping out the roughly $80 million that he sought for that purpose.
Democrat John Kerry, chairman of the Senate Foreign Relations Committee, and Republican Richard Lugar unveiled plans yesterday to expand and overhaul civilian U.S. aid to Pakistan. Essentially, this means tripling the money we're sending to a country we're fairly certain is harboring Osama bin Laden. They call this an urgent step to help defeat Islamists who threaten our nuclear-armed allies' stability. Wait a minute, we're a nuclear-armed nation full of religious extremists. Why don't we get the money?